Chapter 112. It was the dead of night, and very dark, when Barnaby, with his stumbling comrade, approached the place where he had left his father. But he could see him stealing away into the gloom, distrustful even of him, and rapidly retreating. After calling to him twice or thrice, that there was nothing to fear, but without effect, he suffered Hugh to sink upon the ground, and followed to bring him back. He continued to creep away, until Barnaby was close upon him, then turned, and said in a terrible, though suppressed voice, "Let me go. Do not lay hands upon me. You have told her, and you and she together have betrayed me." Barnaby looked at him, in silence. "You have seen your mother?" "No," cried Barnaby, eagerly. "Not for a long time longer than I can tell. A whole year, I think. Is she here?" His father looked upon him steadfastly for a few moments, and then said, drawing nearer to him as he spoke, for, seeing his face, and hearing his words, it was impossible to doubt his truth, "What man is that?" You. "Only you. You know him. He will not harm you. Why, you're afraid of you. Ha ha ha. Afraid of gruff, old noisy you. What man is he, I ask you?" He rejoined so fiercely, that Barnaby stopped in his laugh, and shrinking back, surveyed him with a look of terrified amazement. "Why, how stern you are! You make me fear you, though you are my father. Why do you speak to me so?" "I want," he answered, putting away the hand which his son, with a timid desire to propitiate him, laid upon his sleeve, "I want an answer, and you give me only jeers and questions. Who have you brought with you to this hiding place, poor fool, and where is the blind man?" "I don't know where. His house was close shut. I waited, but no person came. That was no fault of mine. This is Hugh, brave Hugh, who broke into that ugly jail, and set us free. Aha! You like him now, do you? You like him now?" "Why does he lie upon the ground?" "He has had a fall, and has been drinking. The fields and trees go round, and round, and round with him, and the ground heaves under his feet. You know him? You remember? See?" They had by this time returned to where he lay, and both stooped over him to look into his face. "I recollect the man," his father murmured. "Why did you bring him here?" "Because he would have been killed if I had left him over yonder. They were firing guns and shedding blood." "Does the sight of blood turn you sick, father?" "I see it does, by your face. That's like me. What are you looking at?" "At nothing." Said the murderer softly, as he started back a pace or two, and gazed with sunken jaw and staring eyes above his son's head. "At nothing." He remained in the same attitude, and with the same expression on his face for a minute or more, then glanced slowly round, as if he had lost something, and went shivering back, towards the shed. "Shall I bring him in, father?" asked Barnaby, who had looked on, wondering. He only answered with a suppressed groan, and lying down upon the ground, wrapped his cloak about his head, and shrunk into the darkest corner. Finding that nothing would rouse Hugh now, or make him sensible for a moment, Barnaby dragged him along the grass, and laid him on a little heap of refuse hay and straw which had been his own bed, first having brought some water from a running stream hard by, and washed his wound, and laved his hands and face. Then he lay down himself, between the two, to pass the night, and looking at the stars, fell fast asleep. Awakened early in the morning, by the sunshine and the songs of birds, and hum of insects, he left them sleeping in the hut, and walked into the sweet and pleasant air. But he felt that on his jaded senses, oppressed and burdened with the dreadful scenes of last night, and many nights before, all the beauties of opening day, which he had so often tasted, and in which he had had such deep delight, fell heavily. He thought of the blithe mornings, when he and the dogs went bounding on together through the woods and fields, and the recollection filled his eyes with tears. He had no consciousness, God help him, of having done wrong, nor had he any new perception of the merits of the cause in which he had been engaged, or those of the men who advocated it. But he was full of cares now, and regrets, and dismal recollections, and wishes, quite unknown to him before, that this or that event had never happened, and that the sorrow and suffering of so many people had been spared. And now he began to think how happy they would be, his father, mother, he, and Hugh, if they rambled away together, and lived in some lonely place, where there were none of these troubles, and that perhaps the blind man, who had talked so wisely about gold, and told him of the great secrets he knew, could teach them how to live without being pinched by want. As this occurred to him, he was the more sorry that he had not seen him last night, and he was still brooding over this regret, when his father came, and touched him on the shoulder. Ah! Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Barnaby, starting from his fit of thoughtfulness. Is it only you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, who should it be? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I almost thought, apostrophe, he answered, it was the blind man. I must have some talk with him, father. Apostrophe, and so must I, for without seeing him, I don't know where to fly, or what to do, and lingering here is death. You must go to him again, and bring him here. Apostrophe, must I? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Barnaby, delighted. That's brave, father. That's what I want to do. Apostrophe, but you must bring only him, and none other. And though you wait at his door a whole day and night, still you must wait, and not come back without him. Apostrophe, don't you fear that, apostrophe, he cried gaily. He shall come, he shall come. Apostrophe, trim off these gewgaws, apostrophe, said his father, plucking the scraps of ribbon and the feathers from his hat, and over your own dress wear my cloak. Take heed how you go, and they will be too busy in the streets to notice you. Of your coming back you need take no account, for you'll manage that safely. Apostrophe, to be sure. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Barnaby. To be sure he will. A wise man, father, and one who can teach us to be rich. Oh, I know him, I know him. Apostrophe, he was speedily dressed, and as well disguised as he could be. With a lighter heart he then set off upon his second journey, leaving Hugh, who was still in a drunken stupor, stretched upon the ground within the shed, and his father walking to and fro before it. The murderer, full of anxious thoughts, looked after him, and paced up and down, disquieted by every breath of air that whispered among the boughs, and by every light shadow thrown by the passing clouds upon the daisied ground. He was anxious for his safe return, and yet, though his own life and safety hung upon it, felt a relief while he was gone. In the intense selfishness which the constant presence before him of his great crimes, and their consequences here and hereafter, engendered, every thought of Barnaby, as his son, was swallowed up and lost. Still, his presence was a torture and reproach. In his wild eyes, there were terrible images of that guilty night, with his unearthly aspect, and his half-formed mind. He seemed to the murderer a creature who had sprung into existence from his victim's blood. He could not bear his look, his voice, his touch, and yet he was forced, by his own desperate condition and his only hope of cheating the gibbet, to have him by his side, and to know that he was inseparable from his single chance of escape. He walked to and fro, with little rest, all day, revolving these things in his mind. And still Hugh lay, unconscious, in the shed. At length, when the sun was setting, Barnaby returned, leading the blind man, and talking earnestly to him as they came along together. The murderer advanced to meet them, and bidding his son go on, and speak to Hugh, who had just then staggered to his feet, took his place at the blind man's elbow, and slowly followed, towards the shed. Why did you send him? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Stagg. Don't you know it was the way to have him lost, as soon as found? apostrophe apostrophe, would you have had me come myself? Apostrophe apostrophe, returned the other. Humph. Perhaps not. I was before the jail on Tuesday night, but missed you in the crowd. I was out last night too. There was good work last night, gay work, profitable work, he added, rattling the money in his pockets. Have you apostrophe seen your good lady?
Yes.
Apostrophe, do you mean to tell me more, or not? Apostrophe apostrophe, I'll tell you all, apostrophe, returned the blind man, with a laugh. Excuse me, but I love to see you so impatient. There's energy in it. Apostrophe, does she consent to say the word that may save me? Apostrophe apostrophe, no, apostrophe, returned the blind man emphatically, as he turned his face towards him. No. Thus it is. She has been at death's door since she lost her darling husband insensible, and I know not what. I tracked her to a hospital, and presented myself with your leave at her bedside. Our talk was not a long one, for she was weak, and there being people near I was not quite easy. But I told her all that you and I agreed upon, and pointed out the young gentleman's position, in strong terms. She tried to soften me, but that, of course, as I told her, was lost time. She cried and moaned, you may be sure, all women do. Then, of a sudden, she found her voice and strength, and said that heaven would help her and her innocent son, and that to heaven she appealed against us, which she did, in really very pretty language, I assure you. I advised her, as a friend, not to count too much on assistance from any such distant quarter, recommended her to think of it, told her where I lived, said I knew she would send to me before noon next day, and left her, either in a faint or shamming. Apostrophe, when he had concluded this narration, during which he had made several pauses, for the convenience of cracking and eating nuts, of which he seemed to have a pocketful, the blind man pulled a flask from his pocket, took a draught himself, and offered it to his companion. You won't you? Apostrophe apostrophe, he said, feeling that he pushed it from him. Well, then the gallant gentleman who's lodging with you will. Hallo, bully. Apostrophe, death. Apostrophe apostrophe, said the other, holding him back. Will you tell me what I am to do? Apostrophe apostrophe, do. Nothing easier. Make a moonlight flitting in 2 hours' time with the young gentleman.
He's quite ready to go. I have been giving him good advice as we came along,
and get as far from London as you can. Let me know where you are, and leave the rest to me. She must come round. She can't hold out long. And as to the chances of your being retaken in the meanwhile, why, it wasn't one man who got out of Newgate, but 300. Think of that, for your comfort. Apostrophe, we must support life. How? Apostrophe, how? Apostrophe, apostrophe, repeated the blind man. By eating and drinking. And I'll get meat and drink, but by paying for it. Money. Apostrophe, he cried, slapping his pocket. Is money the word? Why, the streets have been running money. Devil send that the sport's not over yet, for these are jolly times. Golden, rare, roaring, scrambling times. Hallo, bully. Hallo. Hallo. Drink, bully, drink. Where are ye there? Hallo. Apostrophe, with such vociferations, and with a boisterous manner which bespoke his perfect abandonment to the general license and disorder, he groped his way towards the shed, where Hugh and Barnaby were sitting on the ground. Put it about. Apostrophe apostrophe, he cried, handing his flask to Hugh. The kennels run with wine and gold. Guineas and strong water flow from the very pumps. About with it, don't spare it. Apostrophe, exhausted, unwashed, unshorn, begrimed with smoke and dust, his hair clotted with blood, his voice quite gone, so that he spoke in whispers, his skin parched up by fever, his whole body bruised and cut, and beaten about, Hugh still took the flask, and raised it to his lips. He was in the act of drinking, when the front of the shed was suddenly darkened, and Dennis stood before them. No offense, no offense, apostrophe said that personage in a conciliatory tone, as Hugh stopped in his draft, and eyed him, with no pleasant look, from head to foot. No offense, brother. Barnaby here too, eh? How are you, Barnaby? And two other gentlemen. Your humble servant, gentlemen. No offense to you either, I hope. Eh, brothers? Apostrophe apostrophe, notwithstanding that he spoke in this very friendly and confident manner, he seemed to have considerable hesitation about entering, and remained outside the roof. He was rather better dressed than usual. Wearing the same suit of threadbare black, it is true, but having round his neck an unwholesome-looking cravat of a yellowish-white, and, on his hands, great leather gloves, such as a gardener might wear in following his trade. His shoes were newly greased, and ornamented with a pair of rusty iron buckles, the pack three that his knees had been renewed, and where he wanted buttons, he wore pins. Altogether, he had something the look of a tipstaff, or a bailiff's follower, desperately faded, but who had a notion of keeping up the appearance of a professional character, and making the best of the worst means. You're very snug here, apostrophe said Mr. Dennis, pulling out a moldy pocket handkerchief, which looked like a decomposed halter, and wiping his forehead in a nervous manner. Not snug enough to prevent your finding us, it seems, apostrophe Hugh answered, sulkily. Why, I'll tell you what, brother, apostrophe said Dennis, with a friendly smile, when you don't want me to know which way you're riding, you must wear another sort of bells on your horse. Ah, I know the sound of them you wore last night, and have got quick ears for 'em, that's the truth. Well, but how are you, brother? Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.